This is a recording of the reading submission titled Questioning Certainty, Tensions as an Ethical Companion, submitted to Murmurations, Journal of Transformative Systemic Practice, Impact of Reading Call for Papers. This is read by the author, Judith Siuri-Vilamos, a doctoral student. The synopsis reads as follows. In this writing, I engage with the articles, Stories of Self, Ideology and Action, and Towards a Heart-Centered Philosophy Embracing Poetry as a Transformative Practice. Both pieces helped me expand how I understand systemic therapy, along with broader considerations of professional responsibility. Inspired by these readings, I reflect on the tensions that arise when therapeutic theories meet lived human complexity and the pressures of neoliberal professional culture. Rather than viewing these tensions as problems to resolve, I approach them as an ethical companions that invite ongoing reflexivity and relational accountability in therapeutic practice. After completing my master's degree, I questioned what really meant to practice from a systemic lens. Without clarity, I was left with more questions than answers as I began my journey of learning in a doctoral program. In rooms where professors were assigned to supervise students, I often found myself sitting with the quiet resistance. I asked myself, "What are we doing here?" It was a feeling I could sense but could not yet name or organize. These writings arrived just in time for a revision of several notions and beliefs that matter deeply to me. Although my training as a systemic practitioner was connected to more linear ways of knowing, I continued to question ideas of the self and its struggles. I found myself shaken by Simon and Abraham. Together, these authors offered a playground of wonder, a space to practice that was not expert-based but more responsible, creative, and kind. Throughout this past year, I had been quietly asking myself, am I doing therapy right? I began to notice how neoliberal ideas had a grasp into my understanding of what professional life needed to be. I felt pressure to perform competence and to speak with certainty. Underneath this was a growing tension within myself, a resistance to certain ways of speaking about people and what was understood as problems. That resistance did not yet feel polished or confident. Felt more like discomfort, a kind of ethical friction. Still, it was there and followed me everywhere as an unrelenting companion. Tensions as an ethical companion. Through Simon's work, I began to understand this tension as an ethical responsibility I hold both to both myself and my clients. Quote, committing to critical thinking about the relationship between theory and human diversity requires that I stay mindful of how theories might insert themselves between me and another person and avoid hidden values within theories coloring what I think I'm seeing. End quote. This invitation to question theory was timely. It gave language to something I had already been feeling in practice, that some frameworks do not fit my worldview, and that many could too easily flatten complexity into explanatory categories like pursuer and withdrawer. Simon's invitations helped me notice when the metaphors I call theories no longer hold and must be reshaped for the unique context of the individuals, couples, and families sitting with me when life's dilemmas feel loud, tangled, and misaligned. These invitations had influenced on my practice in several ways. First, I have become more cautious about allowing theory to arrive before the person does. Earlier in my training, I often felt such an urgency to identify patterns, name the cycles, conceptualize the family structures, and even locate the intervention that best fit the situation, a practice that is often decontextualized from a systemic work. While these moves were often framed as the most desirable outcome in my clinical training, I now see how easily these decontextualized practices become a way of protecting myself from uncertainty. I realize that theory can create the illusion of safety, while in fact, I may be disregarding quickly past the client's own meaning-making. The readings and murmurations have influenced me to consider these ideas in a way that is unique and have taught me to stay longer with what is unfolding before trying to organize it. In practice, this means I am more likely to ask questions that keep meaning open rather than closing it too quickly. This shift feels especially important in my work with couples and families as I continue evolving in my professional practice. In supervision, I often found myself being guided to identify interactional cycles and stages within the emotionally focused therapy model. While I can understand how these frameworks and interventions can be useful, Simon's work reminded me that even relational theories carry values and preferred ways of seeing. Without noticing, we can begin privileging manuals and fixed interventions over complexity, uncertainty, and exploration. The risk in these moments is that clients may become positioned inside frameworks that feel organized and coherent to clinicians, but incomplete to the lived realities of the people sitting in front of us. These experiences have shifted the kinds of questions I now carry into therapy. I found myself wondering how I can take the knowledge and theories available to me and transform them into conversational questions that invite reflection rather than certainty. How can validation and compassion for a hurt partner also speak relational responsibility back to the conversation? Not as a way of correcting, reframing, or disciplining clients into more acceptable positions, but as an invitation for all of us to remain curious about meanings, choices, and relational patterns being created between people in real time. Increasingly, I'm less interested in using theory to explain clients to themselves and more interested in using dialogue to help us question together what becomes possible within their relationships. In conjunction, Abraham's writing disrupted the neoliberal pressure I felt to embody the professional as an expert who had achieved mastery. She writes about her students' struggles in a way that deeply resonated with my own experience. Quote, I felt that these narratives were about their fear of being paralyzed by not knowing. Whilst this might be an aspirational position for systemic practitioners, this was being experienced as limiting to these learners. End quote. Reading this, I could see myself in so many moments of tension during my learning. The expectation to, quote, not know had been presented as a value in my training, yet in practice, it often felt like something I had to perform correctly, rather than something I could genuinely inhabit. Through her writing and the clarity that, quote, it is possible to be uncertain and highly skilled, clear and tentative, and to hold a not knowing as a virtue, end quote. I also began to be considerate and aware that meaningful practice requires a different kind of discipline, one that may return to its origins of care for humanity. An ongoing act of engagement with thinking, observing, and learning in relationship rather than striving towards a fixed sense of mastery. Instead of simply following a model of interventions, this means I'm more willing to stay with tension rather than rush to resolution. For example, when I'm helping couples as they describe being caught in contradiction, when a family's member's pain resists easy reframing, or when I feel uncertain about what is needed, I refuse to experience that tension as evidence of failure in some way I once did. In many ways, I have learned to treat tension as information, a sign that dominant explanations may be insufficient and incomplete. I notice that practicing from this place, I am invited a more human response. Tension has become an ethical companion because it interrupts the fantasy of simple knowing. I'm less interested now in moving clients neatly toward predefined therapeutic outcomes and more interested in creating conditions where new meanings, new relationships, and new possibilities can emerge through active engagement. I've become more attentive to language clients use for themselves and to how therapeutic discourse may either widen or narrow their sense of who they can be. I've come to understand these reflections as connected to decolonizing practice. For me, decolonizing therapy involves questioning the assumptions that professional or theoretical knowledge should automatically hold greater authority than lived experience, relational knowledge, cultural wisdom, or community understandings of suffering. It asks me to remain attentive to how therapeutic discourse can unintentionally reproduce dominant ideas of health, relationships, gender, responsibility, and emotional expression. Rather than striving to become an expert who interprets people's lives for them, I'm increasingly interested in creating conversations where meaning can be questioned, negotiated, and co-created. What becomes possible when clients are not overdetermined by diagnostic culture, theory, or problem-saturated language? What becomes possible when they are met with curiosity rather than correction or psychoeducation? I've also begun to understand that decolonizing practice cannot only exist inside the therapy room. It asks something of me personally and relationally within the communities I belong to as well. Decolonizing myself is an ongoing practice of remaining open to diverse ways of knowing, being, relating, and caring for another beyond professional language or expertise. I experience this in small but meaningful ways outside of clinical work. At the dog park, while exchanging stories and support with other owners navigating loneliness, stress, or change. And within the women's jiu-jitsu community, where hardship, vulnerability, and encouragement and trust are shared through physical exertion on the mats. These spaces remind me that healing, meaning-making, and relational care are not only owned by therapy. They already exist within communities, within shared struggle, and within the ways people show up for one another every day. The greatest influence these authors had on me had been the opportunity to experience a shift of how I engage with knowledge within learning spaces, not only as a therapist, but as a student and as a person who is constantly evolving. I'm starting to resist the pressure to appear settled, to look like I know exactly what I'm doing at all times. Professionalism in that way I had come to understand it once felt like something I needed to perform in order to feel secure. Now it doesn't offer me the same sense of stability. When I take human uniqueness seriously, expertise begins to feel different. It becomes less about having answers and more about how I show up in relationship, about how I participate and how accountable I am to what is happening between me and the people I sit with. These readings did not offer tidy answers, however, they invited me to sit with a whole new perspective and understanding of who I want to become as a relational practitioner. Tension no longer rushes me to offer resolutions, instead tension guides my efforts in developing relationally. I'm no longer interested in mastering therapeutic skills through knowledge. What I'm interested in is the opportunity to meet people with care, curiosity, and willingness to remain present, even when things are uncertain and still unfolding. This is read by the author, Judith Zudi Belemos, who is devoted to relational integrity and holds a position as an associate marriage and family therapist, completing a doctoral study program in couple and family therapy at Alliant University in San Diego. This is, references are Donna Abraham's 2024 work, Towards a Heart-Centered Philosophy, Embracing Poetry as Transformative Practice, published in Murmurations, Journal of Transformative Systemic Practice, along with Gail Simon's 2024 work, Stories of Self, Ideology and Action, published in Murmurations, Journal of Transformative Systemic Practice. Also referenced throughout the writing is Sue Johnson's 2019 work, Attachment Theory and Practice, Emotionally Focused Therapy,